Greeting, Earthlings. We have now taken over your radio.
Welcome in to another edition of the Jayhawk Talk Podcast, episode 58. We are coming to you live in person. Andrew and I in the same room for the first time since, like, I don't know, 2011.
What do you mean in the same room? We're always in the same room.
No, I mean doing this podcast in the
virtual
room.
The virtual room.
Right. Yeah, we
time for football, Kevin.
Yes.
Time for football. We didn't ever get a preview show out there, so this is our preview, but with a little bit of information gleaned from Southeastern Missouri State University from this past weekend. I got to go to the game. You did not. You had a wedding.
Yeah.
So we have two different perspectives. You had a radio TV perspective. I have the in-stadium experience perspective, and so we'll get into that later. I think it's needless to say that we have some hot takes coming up.
Few hot takes. Definitely. You know, like you said, we didn't get a football preview out, but I think we can treat the SEMO game as kind of like a preseason. Like, that was our Washburn basketball game, and now we're getting into the meat because we got to play Duke next.
That's fair. I agree with you that it's probably our preseason game, but we about lost that game. So, sure, if it makes us feel better that we're treating it as a preseason game, that's fine, but we usually don't almost lose to Washburn.
True story. Oh, we did that one year. It was like a 10-point game, I feel like. Anyway, all right. Well, we also want to be sure we thank everybody that came out to the fantasy football party we had a couple weeks ago. Great turnout.
Great turnout.
It was a lot of fun. So good luck to everybody that's in the league, but not really because I'm trying to win that gift certificate.
I play you today.
Oh, really?
I play you today. Yeah, you're projected to win, but you're not going to.
Right. Yeah, we'll see about that. Let's get into SEMO, Andrew, and I just have one thing to say. We are 1-0.
Perfect season.
Undefeated.
Perfect so far.
So far. Did you see that first quarter, Andrew?
We looked like a real Big 12 football team.
Oh, man. Cozart was like doing these bootlegs and rollouts, throwing laser passes.
I bet there were some coaches watching that first quarter in the Big 12 thing. Oh.
Oh.
KU might be for real this year.
Uh-oh.
15 minutes in, this is a good start to the season.
Yeah, did you see all those good things that happened? And then, well, the end of the first quarter ended and it kind of went downhill.
Yeah. The clock struck midnight and everyone turned into a pumpkin.
Yeah. Well, all right. Let's talk about some of the good things because there were some good things in that first quarter, especially. Cozart was 6 for 8 in the first quarter alone, 69 yards, 2 touchdowns, went 8 for 11 overall in the first half. I thought he looked pretty solid. He was, like I said, he was doing those rollouts, getting out of the pocket, which is good because the offensive line wasn't giving him a ton of time, but I think a lot of those are designed, and, you know, he had some rushing yards. He looked pretty good. I was at least intrigued. I don't know about you.
Absolutely. Those rollouts were the most effective thing he was doing, and SEMO, Southeastern Missouri State, had really no answer for it. He was making some good throws. He looked like, you know, he was going to be a big player for us. There was a couple times where we ran some options where he hung in until the very last second and then got laid out, but, you know, made the pitch, made the throw at the last second and turned those into very effective plays. And so those were some positive things we saw from him, but, it was kind of limited to that first half, first quarter.
We're keeping to the positive right now.
Right. So let's talk about positive. So we lost our two best running backs, and I don't think that we've talked about that on the podcast since. Brandon Bourbon out and
Cox
and Taylor Cox out. So we've got to have some new guys in. DeAndre Mann is a guy who carried the ball last night, and Avery also came in. And DeAndre Mann looked, you know, made our running game not miss a beat.
Man, he looked good. He really did.
Do you have any statistics for us on?
Oh, I do somewhere, but I just want to say what I saw from him, which was interesting. While you look up the stats, we obviously lost a really good running back last year in Sims, and I think Mann actually, you know, he had a lot of things that reminded me of Sims. He had some great yards after contact. You know, he had a little bit of wiggle getting through, and once he saw the cut, he burst through. I thought he had a little more acceleration even than Sims, which was nice. He's a little smaller, but I thought he looked really good, and I thought Avery was a really good compliment. I think we're going to be just fine from running back perspective, and I think that was a big question mark coming in, especially since, you know, we lost those two guys. So hopefully they stay healthy. That's obviously going to be important because we don't have as much in the hopper as we did before.
Right, and let's take a look at the rushing game generally. DeAndre Mann, he carried the ball 15 times for 121 yards, which gave him an average of 8.1, which is, you know, that average is always going to be beneficial and always good. Corey Avery actually carried the ball more. He had the ball 19 times for 91 yards, also a respectable 4.8 yards carry. And our boy, Tony Pearson, TP3, showing that he is not going to retire. He's not done. We thought he may be done. But, you know, he carried the ball 3 times for 44 yards, showing that he's pretty quick, too.
Yeah. He's still got the burst. I really hope he stays healthy. We're going to need him this year. I think he's going to be a lot of fun to watch. The other thing, Andrew, that I thought was interesting, the wide receivers are as advertised. And that's something that we've heard a lot of, you know, tracing back to the last couple of years, that these guys were going to, you know, I don't know, people have come in and we thought, oh, this guy's going to be great. But I was actually really, really intrigued by Nigel King and Nick Harwell. I thought they both looked really good catching the ball on the few, you know, chances that they had to catch the ball, but also their blocking downfield was amazing on some of the extending some of these rushing plays. And I think that's going to be really important. We're going to need those wide receivers and Mundine as well, the tight end, to chip block and really take care of some men, because the O-line may not always be able to. So it's nice to have some guys that are buying in and able to extend some plays downfield. I'm really interested to see what it's going to look like with these guys if Cozart really gets going. Because if we can get the ball in their hands on short yardage plays and let them show their talent, I think that's going to be all right.
You know, and just to talk about Nick Harwell for a little bit, he's as good as advertised. Scored 2 touchdowns in the first quarter, which avoids the question that we dealt with for the past couple years, is when is a wide receiver going to catch a touchdown for this team? It didn't happen 2 years ago. It took a while for it to happen last year, but got that monkey off our back.
Mm-hmm.
We can move on.
Yeah.
Deal with other issues,
mm-hmm.
But at least a wide receiver caught a touchdown. And in fact, he caught 2 touchdowns. Also, Tony Pearson caught a touchdown. Tony Pearson had a good game from both the rushing side and the receiving side. So good to see him back healthy.
Definitely.
So there's definitely offensive weapons. This team mm-hmm. has some offensive threats.
Yeah, it's just about getting them the ball. And I think that, you know, the offensive line, even that first quarter, wasn't great, in my opinion. I thought they were serviceable because they were moving Cozart around quite a bit. And I thought the actual play calling was pretty good. It allowed, you know, Cozart to get out in space and get the guys the ball. And the second half, and I know we're still talking about positive things, but that didn't happen as much, at least to me. It didn't seem like he was having as much time. So the offensive line at least started off a little better, but we're definitely going to have to scheme some blocking this year, because I think that might be our worst unit on our team at offensive line. Let's talk about the defense for a second. In that first quarter and first half, actually, they actually looked pretty good. Made some plays, you know, when Simo got the ball down into the red zone at interception, the linebackers looked awesome. Heaney's still a stud. And Dexter McDonald, man, how about him? He had a nice game as well, with 2 interceptions, returned 1, a whole bunch of yards. And I'm really intrigued by the secondary still. Obviously, the loss of Kevin Short sucks, but I think we might see a little bit of a knock there at nickel corner because he's out. We're seeing a true freshman play a little bit, Matthew Boateng. He had an interception, so that's good. But I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how the defense holds up. Defensive line didn't still do a lot for me, pretty undersized. So I think we're going to have to create some pass rush with our linebackers and lining them up. And we saw that a little bit as well. So overall, first quarter, pretty good.
First quarter was great.
24-0. And then, well, let's just throw a few numbers out there. Second half, we were outscored 28-10. by an FCS school at home. And Andrew, I think this is our opportunity to overreact a little bit to this game.
Well, we were going to do that. You don't have to tell me to overreact.
Okay, well, what the hell happened after halftime then?
I don't know. Did they go into halftime and, you know, make every opposite decision they should have made? Because it was a completely different team that came out. The first half, it was obvious that one team was better than the other. One team was more talented than the other, and one team was just overall more effective than the other team. And that was the Jayhawks. They were, you know, the better team at every facet of the game. And that just wasn't true in the second half.
Yeah.
And I still think that you could see that skill that, you know, KU is better up front. KU is better, you know, just from position to position, KU just had the better players. But it didn't translate to success on the field. That didn't matter at all in that game.
Yeah, and that's what's frustrating, I guess. I mean, Weiss was interviewed after the game, obviously, and said something to the effect of, sometimes when you have success, you're shocked by it too. Like, that the team was so maybe even surprised how good things were going that that's why they came out flat in the second half, which makes no sense at all. And another interesting quote from Ben Heaney, interviewed after the game, he said, quote, "We came out in the second half with no juice. Half the stadium's empty like it always is. Fans leaving at halftime. There's no juice in the stadium, and I think that's part of it." How about that?
That's shots fired.
Shots fired.
Shots fired. First of all, he's probably right, but I'm not sure you can blame the fans for that. Because when you're obviously the better team, the more talented team, the guy, you know, the guys who are, you know, FBS caliber players playing against lowly Southeastern Missouri State, you know, you're supposed to win. You're going to have more talent than them. You're going to be bigger and faster than them just because there's not as many fans as there were 15 minutes before. I have a hard time thinking that that's an excuse. Now, I think that's a separate issue.
Yeah.
I think that that's a problem, but I don't think that it really should have any impact on their play.
No, I don't think so either. I mean, you got, as soon as you have some winning seasons put together, then you can start crushing fan base if they're not coming. But honestly, it's just, I have a really hard time blaming fans when you haven't put much on the field to be excited about. And obviously the first half was good. I mean, that was exciting football. I think a lot of people were saying on Twitter and things, you know, the overwhelming consensus was that this is the best AKU football team has looked in a while. So that's something. But then to come out in the second half and do a lot of what they've done in a lot of second halves under the Charlie Weiss era, you know, a lot of people are going to be saying same old, same old. And I don't think you can blame the fans. And they have a pretty good point in saying same old, same old, because you almost lost to an FCS team. I want to talk about this, Andrew. So I was looking at these stats. SEMO had 14 penalties for 174 yards, and they threw three interceptions, and we had no turnovers. And they only lost by 6 points. I mean, they truly, what happens if they had seven penalties for 80 yards like we did or something and threw one interception instead of three? I mean, they win that game, don't they?
Well, let me ask you a different question. If this game of football has five periods instead of four. We don't have four quarters, we have five. Do we win the game?
Man, I don't know.
I think we might lose that game. If that game actually was 5 minutes longer, do we lose that game?
Maybe. I mean, they had all the confidence in the world, and our guys were not.
And another question, if SEMO does some things differently in the third quarter, clock management-wise, are we in danger of losing that game?
Possibly. I mean, that's what's kind of frustrating, I think, that most people are taking out of this game. It's not that, you know, they won the game and, you know, whatever. It's the first game. Maybe people are giving a pass. But just the way it happened and the way they looked, I mean, there was no fight. They were kind of quitting. Maybe, I don't know if they were tired. I mean, whatever it was, they need to get that shit fixed quick because they're about to play some pretty darn good teams.
Well, and I think that the conversation around this KU football team, certainly the past couple weeks, has been, in this first game, it's very important that we get a blowout, because BCS schools, specifically Big 12 schools, are supposed to blow out FCS schools if they're going to be any good.
Yeah.
And so we went through the process. We saw that first quarter and like, okay, this is how a good team is supposed to deal with a team like this.
Yeah.
This is exactly how this is supposed to go. But it felt like towards the end, these first games we've had the past couple years, North Dakota last year, we won, but it didn't feel good. SEMO this year, we won, but it didn't feel good. It
didn't feel very good.
There's nothing to make me feel good at the end of it. However, there was flashes of brilliance on this team. And I think that that's, while we're talking negative, I think ultimately these flashes of brilliance are what we should focus on. That first quarter wasn't fluky. I mean, there was a couple drives where everything clicked. We just have to duplicate that the whole game.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying we have to score 21 points in the first quarter every game, because that's not going to happen. But we have to have some of that offensive effectiveness and defensive effectiveness that we had in that first quarter. I think they had the first three drives were three and outs for SEMO. So it was on both sides of the ball.
Yeah.
So I think it's a little different where everything felt like it was stuck in the mud last year against North Dakota. This year it was, we burned on all cylinders for 15 minutes. We burned as hot as we could. But once the second quarter came around, we had already flamed out. We just got to keep that consistent throughout the whole game. So I think that there's a lot to take away from it. We shouldn't be too negative because, you know, there was some great parts of it. You know, it's the first game. Mm-hmm. Got the W. We just have to replicate what's good, eliminate the bad.
And Andrew, we are undefeated. 1-0. Sorry, Andrew's not used to hearing the drop, so I wanted to make sure I get another drop.
I like it.
There you go. All right, we're done with this. So there were some other games that went on yesterday and around the Big 12. Do you want to talk about that?
Sure. Are y'all ready for this? Come after me.
I'm a man. I'm 40. How about playing a little bit? You ever heard of that one, Stan?
BCS.
Dollar signs.
Okay, the first one we're going to talk about is Farmageddon, the first Big 12 matchup of the year among Big 12 teams. This, of course, is K-State, who played in Ames, Iowa against Iowa State. Farmageddon, Mangino makes his triumphant return to the Big 12, and he did not disappoint. He had some tricky reverse plays. Mm-hmm. He had some, you know, Mangino standard unconventional offense, but K-State came back to win in the final minutes. I think you watched a little bit of this game. Your takeaway from the first Big 12 game?
I thought it was a good game. Iowa State maybe kind of had the same reaction that a lot of people may have had to KU in the first quarter, like, oh, these guys might actually be better than we thought. And I think Iowa State maybe is better than we thought after losing last week, but K-State got the job done. It wasn't pretty. I guess my takeaway here is that K-State, a lot of fans were coming in thinking they were going to blow Iowa State out. That didn't happen. So maybe that'll come down a little bit. So maybe Iowa State rises a little and K-State falls a little, but, K-State got the job done on the road and that's all you got to ask for.
Farmageddon, always a tough game. Okay. Moving on. OU played at Tulsa. OU destroyed Tulsa. They do what good teams do. The first two games, they've outscored opponents 100-23. That's the gold standard for the Big 12 this year.
Yeah, they're good.
They're good.
They're really good.
Next, we'll move on to Missouri State played at Oklahoma State. OSU coming off an impressive loss to Florida State last week. They faced former KU football coach's squad in Missouri State, and they rolled them up 40-23. And that's, of course, Terry Allen there at Missouri State. Oklahoma State better than I thought they were going to be.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that's still the takeaway. Obviously, they're playing Missouri State. Now, not a whole lot you can draw from this, but talking about last week and this week combined, I think they're pretty good. That's going to be a tough game.
Okay, moving on to West Virginia played Towson. Of course, West Virginia last week played Alabama, and they hung with them, did actually fairly well. This week, kind of played the exact opposite team of Alabama.
Yeah.
If you took, like, polar opposites, Alabama versus Towson. So, of course, they won in a 54-0 blowout victory. We go to West Virginia this year any shot we pick them off as a Big 12 opponent?
You know, this is another team that I think a lot of people predicted may not be as good, and they are showing that they are pretty darn good after all. So I'm definitely feeling less confident about sticking with West Virginia in Morgantown.
Okay, let's bang through a couple of these other ones. Baylor played at home against Northwestern State. Their quarterback, Heisman candidate Bryce Petty, did not play. Hmm. So they went with their backup, Seth Russell. And, of course, they won 70-6. So no problems there for Baylor. Let's move on to Texas Tech versus UTEP. Now, Texas Tech may be a team we need to keep our eyes on in terms of possibilities for wins. They're struggling. They won their past two games, but have really been taken to the wire both times. Last week against Central Arkansas, and then this week against UTEP, they needed a score in the final minutes to take the lead against a UTEP team that led for a good portion of the game. So we go down to Lubbock this year. Could be a potential spot for winning a Big 12 road game, something we haven't done since, I believe, the 2008 season.
Yeah, those are basically our two options there, West Virginia to start off and Texas Tech. Maybe one of those has a chance. The only other one that may be an option is K-State. So one of those three this year might have to have a hot take from you later to see if we break the road woes that we've had over the past, what, 4 years, 5 years, 6 years?
It's adding up. And so let's go to the last game. It's BYU played in Austin against the Texas Longhorns and absolutely destroyed them with a win of 41-7. They scored 28 points in the third quarter. I need a hot sports take from you, Kevin.
Mm.
Is Texas our easiest game left on the schedule?
Yes.
Whoa, that's hot.
No.
That's a hot take.
I took it back. I do think it's the easiest game of the next three, though.
Okay, so we have Duke, Central Michigan, Texas.
I actually think Central Michigan will be a harder home game than Texas. Take that. That is a hot sports
take. Okay, we're done with the Big 12. I think we've got some good teams, got some bad teams, but let's focus on our next couple games.
Okay.
So we've got Duke next week, and then Central Michigan, and then we have homecoming Texas at the end of September. Let's talk about Duke a little bit.
Yeah.
Who did Duke play this week?
Duke played Troy.
Duke played Troy, and they were losing into the second half. So it looks like into the second quarter. Looks like Duke, slow starter. KU, fast starter. How do you see this game going?
You know, Duke obviously had a really good season last year. They went 10-3. They were ACC Coastal Division champs. But since then, they lost their quarterback. Their leading rusher was dismissed from the team. They lost their all-ACC linebacker and tight end to season-ending injuries. And I think so far, they're still trying to figure out who they are. As you mentioned, they kind of struggled against Troy. They were down 14-0 at one point. It'll be an interesting game. I think a lot of people, once they saw last season's Duke team, saw that KU had scheduled them and went, ah, man, are you serious? You know, it figures the one time we faced Duke, they're actually going to be good. I don't think they're quite as good as maybe we thought. So this is a good thing. There is a chance, I think. What do you expect the line to be on this game? Maybe 10 to 15 points somewhere in there?
I don't know if it'll be that high.
I was thinking 10. When I first thought Duke would be minus 10. And if it's what I'm getting at is I would actually take KU there.
If KU loses,
I think it's a single digit loss. Obviously, we don't have a ton to take from this SEMO game, but I get the feeling, and maybe I'm wrong here, and maybe just looking through crimson and blue colored glasses, but I get the feeling that maybe they didn't try to show too much versus SEMO. Wanted to hold back some of the gadgets and fun little plays that they were hopefully not needing to use during a SEMO game. It turned out maybe they should have schemed a little more, but so I got to think that we were pretty vanilla, and they're going to see some different blitz packages and see some different plays on offense. So I don't know. I feel like we got a chance here. I'm not sure I'm ready to predict a victory, but I do think it will be a closer game than a lot of people might think.
I think that we said that last year about we didn't want to show a whole bunch and then the game ended up being close.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure that there was anything left in the tank that, you know, that we weren't using. I think we were doing what we were going to do. I don't think that we've got any complicated, well, and maybe we don't know yet. And maybe we just haven't implemented it because we, you know, need more practice at it. But I'm not sure if that's a great excuse for, you know, our slow start. But I think that, you know, you have a one more week of practice, some experience. We know our strengths better. We know our weaknesses better. So I think that you're going to see a more consistent team next week. But this Duke team is not a pushover like they would be, you know, eight, nine times out of ten.
Right.
So like, I think we're like catching them. We're catching them on a very high point, and they're kind of catching us at a low point, but hopefully rising up.
You know, here's the thing, though. They still have a track around their stadium, and we don't.
Okay, well, let's talk about that at the end.
We are 1-0 without track.
I've got some game day experiences. We'll save that for the very end.
But damn it, they do have a track.
They do have a track. And you know what? You know my take on this. It didn't bug me a whole bunch.
You're wrong.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about how this game could go. Of course, David Cutcliffe is the head coach of Duke, and he is the man behind Peyton Manning, the man behind Eli. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. He was the offensive coordinator at Tennessee for Peyton, and of course, the head coach at Ole Miss for Eli. Peyton goes back and throws with him in the offseason, and when Peyton had to rehab his back or his neck, he went to Duke and threw around with David Cutcliffe. So you're going to see, you know, a quarterback-oriented offense from this Duke team, which is going to put some stress on our secondary. Our secondary is definitely going to be tested. We gave up 297 yards in the air to an FCS school, but we also had three interceptions, two, of course, by Dexter McDonald. So that's going to be a key matchup, I think, defensively, is whether that secondary can step up, especially, you know, from the, you know, voting from the nickel position, because he's definitely going to be utilized next week. So that's where I think you should look. But I think that this game is closer than people think. You know, if you're saying that it's a 10-point spread for Duke, I think it's going to be a lot closer than that. I think that we have a shot to win.
So let's get a prediction out there. I want to hear, I mean, we'll talk a little bit more later, but I want to know your prediction right now for Duke game.
I think we win 24-17.
Woo!
Yep, called it.
Wow.
Calling my shot.
Hot take.
Hot take. But I think that we're going to, you know, step it up a little bit. This Duke team's not as good, and I think that we're better than what we showed yesterday.
Okay. I'm going to go 31-27 Duke. Hope I'm wrong. Hope you're right. Let's, Andrew, transition here. Let's get a little football preview going. Of course, last time we were on here on the podcast, we did the football preview, where we did the preview to the preview, and now we're going to do the football preview. And Andrew, I want to talk a little bit about what you think the biggest strength of this team is. Well, going into the season and having seen the preseason game now, what is the biggest strength that KU has to bring to the football field?
I think it's that the running back position.
Interesting.
Okay. Now, you may disagree with me, but it seems like we can just plug in guys and they can get 100 yards. I mean, we had two guys who, you know, did excellent yesterday, guys who had never played in a Division I game, and they looked like, you know, experienced running backs. Like, it seems like this is going to be a position of strength for us, just kind of like it always is. And maybe we need some other areas to step up if we're going to be, you know, a better team, but it doesn't seem like, you know, we missed James Sims. You know, he left because he was a senior and didn't really miss a beat. You know, he was an all-time great running back at KU. And, you know, you think a guy like that leaves and then two guys get hurt, the first and second string. And really, those guys played excellent yesterday.
Yeah, I think, you know, the good news is Reggie Mitchell, our running backs coach, is kind of a recruiting guru too, has continued to bring in great talent at running back, and thank goodness for it, because we're a little light on the depth chart now. I have running back as a question mark. I'm still not ready to, not that these guys don't have talent. I think they are talented, and I was talking about it earlier, but I'm still a little concerned about our offensive line being able to allow them to have any room to operate. So I think some of it will be scheme. I think they're going to have to get creative ways to get these guys the ball in space. Obviously, the option was one of them, the zone read a little bit yesterday, although I still have question marks with Cozart's ability to do the zone read. But I think there were some good things on the running game. But I still think that the biggest strength to me is either wide receiver, linebacker, or in the secondary. And I know that's three things, but that's the one or the three position groups that I feel really good about at KU. Wide receiver, it's been a while since we've said that, probably back since the days of Sunshine, Kerry Meyer, and Dez Briscoe were in the lining up on the line. But you know, at the same time, you could say the same thing about linebacker with Ben Heaney and Jake Love and these guys kind of being the Banks Floodman and that whole crew that was all pretty good too. I think it's a good thing to have linebacker and secondary as a strength, because in the Big 12, obviously there's going to be a lot of passing. Linebackers are going to have to find a way to get some pressure on the quarterback, because I don't think the defensive line is. But the good news is we have some strengths there in some places that maybe we haven't had in recent years. Let's talk about the weaknesses, though.
I think that the weaknesses are pretty glaring, and that's both on the offensive line and defensive line.
Yeah.
And I think if you talk to any big-time head coach in the Big 12, they'll tell you that to win games and to be an elite team, you've got to win the battle in the trenches, on the offensive line, on the defensive line, and that's where we're going to have to hide some weaknesses. And that was even evident last night against inferior talent.
Yeah, I agree. And the good news is, with John Regan coming in and bringing a new offense, some of that can be masked a little bit. Running a pro-style offense behind an inefficient offensive line is basically a recipe for disaster, which we've seen the last 2 years, obviously. Spreading it out a little bit and having a quarterback that can run and extend plays outside the pocket, that will help quite a bit on the offensive line, maybe mask some of their deficiencies. On the defensive line, we talked about it a little bit, but obviously I think they give up a little bit of size. They're not as quick as you'd think for smaller guys, but the good news is our linebackers can hide a little bit of their problems too. Even yesterday, we saw points at which several linebackers were lined up on the line next to the defense, defensive line. We had four or five guys. So we had some edge rush, which was nice, and that will help a little bit, but that also puts a whole lot of pressure on those defensive backs. And luckily we do have some guys that are pretty good there, but definitely don't want to leave them out on too many islands.
You also mentioned that running back was a question mark for you, but I think additional question mark is Montel Cozart at the quarterback position.
Mm-hmm.
You saw Michael Cummins come in for a couple runs. You know, they ran a couple packages for him. But I think Cozart, he is the guy this year.
Yeah.
You saw his, first half was, pretty stellar, pretty spectacular. Had three passing touchdowns and, seemed to be, well on his way to becoming an elite Big 12 quarterback. But then the second half happened and he went 4 for 13. Just really didn't feel comfortable from that position. Charlie Weiss said that, the problem was that we're taking more shots downfield. But maybe that's not his problem, but why were we taking shots downfield when we were, up by so many points?
Well, they said it was...
Why weren't we doing what was working?
Yeah, I guess the reason he said, and I guess there's many questions to the way that he described it, but he basically said they were daring us to go downfield because they were pressing up, reacting to our short passing game that was working. And
well, that fix worked.
Yeah.
They made adjustments in halftime, and we didn't make any adjustments that worked.
So. And that's really what I think the counterpoint to what he said was, okay, so figure out a new adjustment. This is a chess match. It's going to happen in football. And one thing we've seen out of Charlie Weiss teams is they go into halftime, they actually, showed up a little bit, looked pretty good, maybe have a lead or close to it against teams that maybe you're a little bit superior to them, and then they come out and get blown out. And so that's what's frustrating. You want to be able to see, hopefully, they can put together a full game, which is something that hasn't really happened much. But I agree, he was not good in that second half. And whether it was play calling or him or whatever infected the team at halftime, they need to get it figured out. Let's talk about the schedule here. Andrew, last year we did this as we were going through the schedule, and I think we both landed on KU being a bowl team.
Yeah, we were wrong.
Yeah.
We were incredibly wrong.
We were kind of being facetious a little bit.
Are we going to do, or is that going to happen this year?
At least I was. I think you meant it.
All right. Did I?
Yeah, I think you did.
Well, maybe I did, because I believe in my team.
You believe. Blue Wings Rising.
Okay, all right. Let's go through it. So we've got, we're 1-0.
1-0.
We've got a couple more to go. Let's go through the first couple. I'll ask you. Duke, next week, you've already said...
Loss.
I said win. Okay, Central Michigan at home in 2 weeks.
Oh, God.
Just to talk a little bit about Central Michigan. They beat Purdue at Purdue this week. You know, Purdue's pretty bad, but...
Still.
They can beat big-time teams. What do you think on Central Michigan?
You know, it's actually interesting. In their first game, they played Chattanooga and only won by four points. And then they go into Purdue and just blow them out. So that's a little scary. I don't know. I think they're pretty good. I think they're actually one of the better teams left. I think they might even be better than Duke. I mean that. And so I don't know. I think it's going to be a toss-up. I guess I'll give us the win. Charlie said he wanted September. I'm giving him September. We're going to go 2-1 on my.
I'm in. I'm 2-1. I'm predicting the big win against Central Michigan.
So that's 3-0 for you.
Oh, yeah. It's yeah. Oh, I'm.
You're undefeated
I'm
right
undefeated.
Now. I'm undefeated. All right.
Play the drop. Dun.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. All right. So we got Texas at home up next. I've come out and said that I think Texas is actually one of the easier games in September. What do you got?
I think it's one of the easier ones, but I don't think we win.
Ha! So we're back, because I say we win 3-1, 3-1.
Okay.
So here's what Charlie asked for. He asked for September, and I said, if we go 3-1 in those first four games, I'm in. Because that means you either won against Texas at home or Duke on the road, or you dropped one silly one somewhere else.
So we're both at 3-1.
I think most KU fans would be very happy with 3-1.
Okay, Charlie, we're giving you September.
And then it gets a little...
Let's get into October here. So we have at West Virginia, going to Morgantown. Last time we went to Morgantown, I believe we played Geno Smith.
Yeah, we got crushed.
And it was not exciting.
Crushed. They put up a lot of points. Loss for me.
Yep, loss.
Okay. Oklahoma State at home.
Loss.
Could be an interesting game, but I still think I think we cover a spread, whatever the heck the spread is, but I still think loss.
Okay.
All right.
I'm a loss. So we're both at 3-3.
It's not getting any easier here. Okay, so Texas Tech on the road. Okay, here's an opportunity for a hot sports
win.
State. There it is.
Win.
All right. I still say loss. But you have your first breaking the
that's
road.
Four wins. I'm predicting this is bold for me.
This is very bold.
So 4-3, we're over 500. This is mid-October at this point.
I'm at 3-4, and now we got Baylor on the road.
Oh, no, we have Texas Tech on the road.
That's what you just said.
Texas, yeah, Baylor, yep.
Okay.
Okay, yep, moving on to Baylor.
Yeah, lost.
On the road, new stadium.
Beautiful stadium.
Against Bryce Petty and the Baylor Bears. Yeah, lost.
No chance.
4-4 for me.
3-5 here. Okay, so we're talking about Iowa State and TCU at home. So this is our stretch, our home stretch here. We have a real tough stretch there in the center. And then we have two home games here, Iowa State and TCU, that could really be the difference. Say they end up with four games won by the time you get to where you're talking about. They're talking about, okay, we got four games left. We might be a bowl team if we win two of them. And these are the two you're looking at real hard. So Iowa State at home, what do you got?
I say we win.
Okay.
Mangino's going to come in and, you know, he's going to want blood. He's going to be out for vengeance. We're going to say, hey, we still like you, buddy. Go easy on us. But I still think that we get the victory.
See, here's the thing. I think every year we get to Iowa State on this prediction thing, and we're like,
chalk it up.
Yeah, at least we got Iowa State. We got a chance to win. And then we get crushed.
Right, so, and I'm going to make the same mistake.
So I'm actually going to say win, but I don't feel great about it. Now let's get
to TCU.
I'm
at 5.
I'm at 4. All right, TCU's up next. TCU at home.
This is a game we should have won for the past 2 years.
Third time's a charm?
No.
No?
I think I'm going to pick a loss here.
Okay. I think we actually win this game.
Okay, so now we're even. Now yep. We need one more game for each of us to go to a bowl game.
Oh, God.
Is it going to happen? Are we going to predict KU to go to a bowl game?
No.
Again?
All right. Well, the next
game. So we've got two games left, both on the road. Under our scenario here, we have to win one of these games to go to the, what?
Pinstripe?
No, not even that.
Insight? I don't know.
Idaho Potato Bowl.
Beef O'Brady.
Sacramento Bowl.
Whatever. Okay, so Oklahoma on the road.
Loss. Not going to win that.
And K-State on the road.
Ooh. K-State on the road in what could be Bill Snyder's last Big 12 game or big game at a Bill Snyder family stadium.
Really?
Yeah, there are people predicting him to maybe step down this year. This could be his last game against KU, last Big 12 game.
I think he's going to coach until he dies.
If it's true, we have no shot if that's his last game.
I'm not sure we have a shot either way.
I don't think we have a shot. K-State's pretty good. They have a senior quarterback who, you know, I know they struggled against Iowa State, but I'm not predicting a win.
If they have some injuries, you know, who knows? Things can happen, but I say no. So we both landed on 5-7. Is that right?
I think we landed on 5-7.
Okay. So we're, you know, that's, if we won 5 games this year, what would you be happy with the outcome? 5-7?
I think you'd be thrilled with 5-7.
I think I would be too.
Because I think this is a, you know, fairly young team. A lot of these guys, most of these guys are going to come back. And offensively, Harwell's gone. Some of the wide receivers are
a lot of defense is gone.
But I think some of the key positions, you look at year to year as being important for continuity are back. Quarterback, running back, a couple other places. So, I mean, it's definitely something to build on.
Yeah, 5 wins would be good, I think. I think I set the over-under at 4 with you. And I can't remember what you took.
I took the under, but now going through it, I'm convincing myself on some of these.
Okay.
You can't blame me. I'm a KU fan who wants to see wins, so I'm going out of my way
to get to 5 wins.
Yeah,
that's what's frustrating.
But I think as we're talking about it, it's not completely unreasonable for that to happen.
No, I don't think so. I think the ceiling is 6 and the floor is 1 or 2. Right. So, I mean, truly, we're talking about the ceiling or close to it with 5-7. But I think that's with some things breaking right, we go 5-7. And so, you know, hopefully we can see some improvement, especially on the offensive side this year. We're obviously going to need to score more than 20 points a game to win games, something we didn't do much last year. We started off with 34 this year off the first game. That's something, because we haven't...
the most points we scored.
In a long time.
We didn't score. I think the highest we scored last year was 31.
Yeah, so...
And that was against North Dakota.
So that's the thing. You know, hopefully we can get some things together. I want to talk a few bold predictions before we get out of here, Andrew.
Bold predictions.
My first bold prediction for this season is that Tony Pearson makes it through the year and leads the team in receiving yards.
In receiving yards.
What do you think of
that? Not total yards, nope. Just receiving yards.
Receiving yards.
I like it. I think he may lead the team in total yards, but not necessarily receiving, because they're going to put him on a lot of different places, have him run the ball, have him catch the ball.
I think he's going to do it with half the catches as the next guy up.
Absolutely, because he's a burner. Okay, moving on from my bold prediction.
What do you got?
Let me think of one. Texas Tech winning at Texas Tech in Lubbock.
That's a bold
prediction. That was a bold prediction. We went through that. I think that Cozart averages above 56% completion rate.
That would be good.
For the year. I mean, that's bold, I think.
Yeah.
Because we haven't had a guy, with Heaps and with Chris the year before, they've been under 50 or right at 50. So I think between 55 and 60, I think, is something he's going to accomplish.
You got to hope so.
50 last week, or 50 against SEMO, I think that number goes up.
You got to hope so, especially if we get some of these quick hitters going and roll out some of those shorter passes. You got to have a higher percentage if we're going to do a lot of that. But I like it. Hopefully it's a little more than that even. My second bold prediction is that DeAndre Mann leads the team in rushing and touchdowns scored. How about that?
I think so. I mean, this is a guy we didn't know a whole lot about, but after seeing him play yesterday, he's one of my favorite players.
Yeah, he looked really good.
So I'm excited to see him play every week.
All right, you got any more?
Let me think if I have another one. I think it's easy. Well,
Before you do it, I'll give you an opportunity to change your mind on that K-State game and make a 6-6 team.
I will say that
bold predictions.
Charlie Weiss keeps his job.
All right.
Yeah, and we go into next season feeling, you know, surprisingly confident.
No way. I that's the bold prediction. That's too bold. My last bold prediction is we have two Big 12 first teamers this year on defense in McDonald and Ben Heaney.
Well, I think Ben Heaney is the obvious one. I think he's a beast, and he showed it last night. McDonald had a great game. Hopefully he can keep that up. He played like he did last night against, you know, elite competition against what are going to be NFL players. He's definitely going to deserve to be on a Big 12 first team.
There's some good DBs in our league too, and I think he could be among the top. Here's hoping. Talking about some draft picks actually this year. We got some seniors that'll probably be NFL draft picks, which is interesting.
Wow.
Yeah, think about that.
Great news.
We haven't had one of those in a while.
Now it's been quite a while. Yeah. I guess my last one is by the end of September, we're going to be cracking 44,000 in attendance.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was not there yesterday.
No, it looked a little sparse.
Yeah, so let's transition out of here and talk a little bit about the game. You watched it on TV and on the radio because you were doing wedding stuff. I was there.
Mm-hmm.
We ended up getting a great tailgating spot.
Okay.
It's going to be great. It's different from last year, but it's a little closer to the stadium.
We'll have to tweet out where the Jayhawk Talk absolutely. Tailgate is.
We'd love to hear from you. Come by and have some of our beers. We're more than happy to share a little bit. Maybe. Yeah,
just like a little bit.
Depends on how stocked we are. But, you know, absolutely come by. We're going to be, I think we're in between. Well, we'll tweet it out. Just look on the Twitter account for where we're going to be to make sure we're going to be at the same spot. But ultimately, we showed up pretty early and, you know, got a great spot. Had a great time. Watched a little bit of the Royals game. Somebody had a TV out there.
All
right. It was you know, great. So, but it didn't feel like the first game of the season.
Really?
It wasn't. And what I mean by that, it was kind of easy to get there.
Mm.
When it's the first game of the season, it should be hard to get to the stadium.
Yeah.
There should be too many cars. There should be too many people. Really wasn't the case yesterday.
Not so much.
Kind of easy.
That's not good. You want it to be a little difficult.
Right. And I understand it was a smaller game against a smaller school. But
terrible weather too. I mean,
it was perfect. It was 77 degrees out. But it was in. I think at the beginning of the game, Ben Heaney was absolutely right. It was pretty full. I mean, it was a good looking stadium. But at halftime, pretty sparse.
Was it
pretty sparse? So I think that, you know, got to go out and support your team. There may be something to, you know, having people in the crowd to energize the team. Can't blame it entirely on the fans. No. Got to give us something to watch. But I think it kind of goes hand in hand a little bit.
Well, we'll see what it's like for Central Michigan. It should be you know, I think a lot of it is how we perform at Duke. If they go win at Duke, I think that stadium will be pretty full. So that's, you know, show us something and we'll be there. I think that's really what it comes down to. Anything else before we get out of here, Andrew?
Just to talk a little basketball, Sviatoslav Mikhailiuk.
Yeah, it's close.
Yeah, it's close. Close enough. Played against the big boys in the FIBA World Cup basketball tournament.
Ah, yes.
Played against Team USA in the third and fourth quarter in that game.
How many points?
He had a three.
Oh, perfect.
Had a three. Didn't look great. I mean, he missed a couple shots, but this is a 17-year-old going up against Anthony Davis and Steph Curry, James Harden, and, you know, held his own. He's pretty skinny.
Yeah.
But, so is Steph, you know, Curry. He looked like he deserved to be out there.
That's good.
So, I mean, yeah, keep an eye on him. He's going to be back in town. He never was here because Ukraine was eliminated. So good to see him at the high level.
Yeah.
But he didn't. I mean, I think he was the youngest player to ever play in that tournament.
Cool.
So, all right. Good for him.
Right on. Well, we will talk some more hoops, certainly, as we get a little closer to the hoop season. But we're going to be talking some football here on the Jayhawk Talk podcast for the next several episodes. We'll be back with you after the Duke game, bringing you everything that we can from the Duke game, previewing Central Michigan. And we look forward to a great season here on the Jayhawk Talk podcast, previewing the football season. Hopefully we can win some games.
And you can follow Kevin at Jayhawk Talk and me, Andrew. You can follow me at Sherlock Hoops.
There you go. We will catch you next time and rock chalk. I tried to tell him.
Every time we on the court, I tried to tell them that we never coming up short. I tried to tell them that we came here to get the win. I tried to tell them that they should never let us in. They say that we the best, but I say we the greatest. That's why they try to knock us down and always seem to hate us. That's why they talk about us, they know they can never fade us. It's tradition and that Kansas pride that has truly made us. They know just how we feel, they know at Allen Field that we gon' keep it real. Shout out to Bill. This for them fans that waited off in them long lines, camped out before the games, and they stayed a long time. Every dollar that we spend just to watch our team win, on a Jayhawk shirt or a new clean Benz with a sticker on the back with the K and the U. Uh-huh, yeah, baby, that'll make you say, ooh. We at the top of the top, just like we should be. Started from the bottom, thanks to what James could see. Dr. Naismith made a game for man, changed lives for the players, and did the same for the fans.
This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks.
And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby.
This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks.
And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby.
All them years that we've been cheering, everything that we've been hearing, all them spreads that we've been clearing, never been no team we fearing, and look how Bill got us steering, all them tournaments appearing with no team that's interfering. Nine times get to cheering with them banners held high and the crowd going wild. Night before the Final Four, you can't even sleep now. Yeah, we at the peak now, we can't even leap down. March Madness, man, we've been waiting weeks now. If you a Hawks fan, go ahead and hold them ones high. Shout out to the boosters showing love and the alumni. I'm speaking for the fans, even though I'm just one guy. We appreciate the love, love won't run dry. Imagine the state of Kansas with no Jayhawks. That's like having no streets but trying to jaywalk. They see us as support and we see them on the court, so we keep it loud and do our best so we don't come up short. We win together and we lose together, but win or lose, we still booze together. Struggles in my life will change me as a man, but one thing that'll never change, I'll be a Jayhawk fan.
I ain't even gotta really say it.
This one for the fans, that's why I made it.
March Madness, here we can't be faded.
Rock Chuck Jayhawk in your faces.
I ain't even gotta really say it.
This one for the fans, that's why I made it.
March Madness, here we can't be faded.
Rock Chuck Jayhawk in your faces.
This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks.
And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks,
this
baby.
This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawks.